Good morning. My name is Angela Ryder. I'm the chair of the Arizona State Board of Massage Therapy. It is Monday, September 26, 2022, at 9 a.m., and I'm calling this meeting to order. Folks on the video conference, please mute yourselves until it is your opportunity to speak, or if you've been called upon, to eliminate distractions of any background noise. The chair of the Arizona State Board of Massage Therapy reserves the right to change the order of items published on this agenda, except for public hearings set for a specific time. During the board meeting and upon a vote of the majority of a quorum, the board may go into executive session to obtain legal advice from the board's attorney pursuant to ARS 38-431.03A3 on any items listed on the agenda. All meeting attendees whose presence is not required in an executive session may remain in the boardroom meeting when the board withdraws to the chambers for an executive session. Any and all legal action by board members will only take place in open session. In accordance with the open meeting law, the board has a civility policy that prohibits any type of disorderly conduct that disrupts the board from carrying out its business. Individuals found violating this policy will be asked to modify their behavior and act civilly, and if the disorderly conduct continues, the person may be removed from the meeting. Executive Director Tom Augerton, will you please call roll? And unmute yourself, please.
Apologize. Thanks, Madam Chair, for both the reminder and the cue. Board Member Tapscott.
Present.
Board Member DeRoost?
Present.
Vice Chair Moon?
Present.
Chair Ryder?
Present.
Four here and one vacant.
Thank you. Pursuant to ARS 38-431.01H, the board may make an open call to the public during the public meeting, subject to a reasonable time, which is 3 minutes, place and manner restrictions to allow individuals to address the public body on any issues within the jurisdiction of the public body. However, members of the board are not allowed to discuss or take legal action on matters raised during an open call to the public unless the matters are properly noticed for discussion and legal action. The board, however, may ask staff to review a matter or may ask that a matter be put on a future agenda. Please be advised that a call to public is not an opportunity for testimony for cases that are being reviewed by the board. Do we have a call to public? And it appears that we do not. The board members should have had an opportunity to review the board packet for today. Are there any conflicts of interest? Okay, and there are not. Next, we'll be discussing and approving the massage board open minutes. All board members should have had an opportunity to review these massage board open minutes from June 27th, 2022 and July 25th, 2022. Is there any discussion regarding these open minutes? I move to accept and approve the massage board open minutes from June 27th, 2022 and July 25th, 2022. May I have a second?
This is Vice Chair Moon. I'll second that motion.
And a roll call vote, please, Mr. Augerton. Unmute, please.
Board Member Tapscott?
Aye.
Vice Chair Moon?
Aye.
Board Member DeRoost?
Aye.
Chair Ryder?
Aye.
Four ayes.
The motion passes. It is Monday. Next up, we have a presentation by Matt Schaefer. Can we confirm that he has made it on the call? Okay, perfect. Matt Schaefer, please... thank you for being here. Matt Schaefer is the Associate Policy Director and National Center for the Interstate Compacts Council of State Governments. Without further ado, I will give you the virtual floor and please educate us today.
Great. Thank you. And good morning, everybody. My name is Matt Schaefer with the Council of State Governments. I'm in CSG's National Center for Interstate Compacts and here to talk about today about the Massage Therapy Interstate Compact, which would be a legal agreement between states developing reciprocity of licensure and facilitating multi-state practice. And just want to confirm that you guys are seeing my screen that I'm sharing currently with the slides.
Yes, we are. Thank you, Matt.
Great. Okay, so an interstate compact is a legal, legislatively enacted contract between two or more states. So this is a legally binding agreement between two or more states. There's compacts with regions of states. There's national compacts that have all 50 states as a member. And then there are smaller compacts just between two states. So these contracts are passed through the legislature. So in order to join a compact, Arizona would need to enact the model legislation that I'll be talking about today. And the most commonly cited example of an interstate compact that you can see here on the screen is your driver's license. So rather than the federal government mandating states to recognize each other's driver's licenses, the states came together and developed a collaborative solution whereby states would recognize each other's driver's licenses. And so you as a motor vehiclist can now hold one license in your home state and drive in any other state in the country that you want to without having to stop at a state border and get a new driver's license. And this was done through an interstate compact developed by the states. In recent years, compacts have really been used by a lot of professions to facilitate licensure mobility. So the primary thing that these compacts are trying to achieve is facilitating multi-state practice. So the example that I just gave of the driver's license is actually fairly analogous to what we're trying to do here with the massage therapy compact, whereby you hold a license in your home state and you're able to practice in other member states that are part of the compact without having to go and get licensed there. And you can see here just how popular these licensure compacts have been. Nine professions currently have these, and over 230 pieces of legislation just in the past 6 years. Every state is a member, or nearly every state is a member of at least one of these compacts, and the majority have passed at least three. So here's the list of professions that currently have these in place. You can see nursing and medicine led the way. They were the first out the door in 2015 and followed up by all these other professions. OT and counseling and APRN, these are relatively newer, so that's why their membership is a little bit lower just within the last 2 years. Those have been developed. And then here's a list of all of the current occupational licensing compacts that CSG is currently developing. So these are all being funded through a cooperative agreement that CSG has with the Department of Defense. So DOD really cares about interstate compacts because of their military spouse population that's highly mobile. So if you think about being a military spouse, moving on average of every 1 to 2 years, that becomes extremely burdensome to navigate each new state's specific licensing process, maybe having to go back to school and take additional coursework, taking an additional exam. Those things start to add up along with the administrative burden of having to wait several months for the application processing time. So DOD has said that interstate compacts are the best long-term solution for their military spouses, and so that's why they're committed to working with CSG to fund all of these new licensing compacts. And you can see massage therapy there on the list along with all these other professions. Okay, so just now to switch gears and talk about the compact itself. So here are some commonly used terms that you'll see if you go and review the model legislation. So the first term here is a member state, and that just means any state that has joined the compact. A home state is a member state, which is the licensee's primary state of residence. So this is where the licensee lives the majority of the time and intends to return indefinitely. It's their primary domicile. A remote state is any member state that's not the licensee's home state. A multi-state license is the license granted via the compact that authorizes practice in all remote compact member states. So that's what the massage therapist is applying to receive that would allow them to practice in all the other member states that are part of the compact. We call this a multi-state license. And then the commission is just the governing body whose membership consists of all the representatives of the member states. So if Arizona passed the compact, you would get to elect one person to sit on the commission. And the commission is the one who administers and implements the compact on an ongoing basis. So CSG just helps write the compact and helps it get passed out in the states. But then the commission takes over once the member states have actually joined the agreement. Okay, so how does it work? Just a very high-level overview here. So the LMT wants to practice in other compact member states in addition to their home state, so that LMT would apply for a multi-state license. The home state then verifies that they're eligible. They conduct the background check associated with the application. The LMT pays fees related to the multi-state license. And then the commission, if everything is good, the home state has verified they're eligible, the licensee's paid the fees, the commission will then issue the multi-state license on behalf of all of the remote states. And then the LMT receives that multi-state license, and now they can practice in all member states that are part of the compact with no additional action on their end. Okay, so here are some of the requirements to join the compact. So we're going to start and talk about state requirements to join the compact. So this is not what the licensee has to have in place. This is what the state has to have in place. So number one, the state has to license and regulate massage therapy. There are some states out there that don't regulate massage therapy. I know Kansas doesn't. California, I think, only has a certification, not a license. And so they would not be eligible to join. You have to license massage therapy. Number two, require that licensees satisfy education requirements prior to being licensed in that state. This does not set a specific hours amount, but just says that the state has to require some education. And so the rationale behind not setting a specific hours amount was that we don't want this compact to only be for certain states. We don't want this to only be for states who are at 500 hours or only states who are at above 700 hours. We want all states to be able to join, and so we don't specify a particular hours number here. Number three, have a mechanism in place for investigating and receiving complaints about licensees. And then number four, require that licensees within the state pass the national licensure examination. Now, you may be wondering, why don't they just say the MBLEX? That's the standard requirement across states. But we typically don't name specific exams and providers of exams within the compact because we want this to be evergreen. We want this to grow with the profession. And so maybe in 20 years, the MBLEX changes their name, or it's no longer administered by FSMTB, or there's some sort of new exam out there. This would allow the commission some flexibility to make some changes without having to go back and rewrite the entire statute. Okay, some more state requirements here. Notify the commission of any discipline taken against the licensee. The state has to comply with the rules of the commission. The state has to require a background check for licensure. And then lastly, the state has to participate in the compact data system. So the compact is going to house an information system that has information about licensees, any discipline history, any history related to denial of licensure, the presence of significant investigative information that's currently ongoing. So all of this is necessary in order to help maintain public health and safety, so we don't just have people running around the country practicing in different states without some sort of mechanism to be able to track them. So that's what the data system is for. And this is just saying that states, by agreeing to join the compact and participate in the compact, you have to also participate in the data system. Okay, so now we're shifting gears away from the state requirements and we're talking about practitioner requirements. So number one here, the practitioner has to hold an active and unencumbered license in their home state. So this is something we've gotten a lot of questions about. Why is it necessary for them to be licensed where they live? And if there's questions about that, I'd be happy to answer those. But just know that that's a fundamental principle of the compact is that you have to hold a license in your home state. So you have to live where you're licensed, and then that punches your ticket to obtain a multi-state license. Number two, the licensee has to have completed at least 625 clock hours of massage therapy education or substantial equivalent. So we got a lot of questions about this provision as well. What if I'm coming from a 500-hour state? Am I still eligible to join? The 625 aligns with ELAP standards that were developed by the major massage therapy associations, FSMTB, AMTA, ABMP, COMPTA. All these groups came together and did an analysis to determine a competent threshold for entry-level practice, and they came up with 625. So this aligns with those standards. But also, the way that this is currently drafted allows for people coming from 500-hour states to still be able to participate. So you can apply continuing education hours to this total. This is not saying that it all has to be done pre-licensure. So if you're somebody that only went to school for 500 hours, but you've been practicing for 10 years and you have enough CEs, you could apply that to this total here. So that's what a substantial equivalency is referring to, is that the commission would be able to determine what is substantially equivalent to the 625 clock hours. So if they have continuing education or something, they could apply that to this total. Number three, pass the national licensing examination or substantial equivalency. Again, same language here. So again, we're talking about the MBLEX, although we're not naming the MBLEX explicitly for the reason I stated previously. And then substantial equivalency, that term here is really getting at allowing the commission to approve exams that existed before the MBLEX. So if you took the NC, I always forget this acronym, the NCTEMBA exam is how I've been told,
NCBTMB.
That's it, yes. Thank you. If you pass that exam, that would qualify as the substantial equivalent. And then number four, pay all related fees related to the application. Okay, and then the working group that we've been working with to develop this was very mindful of the criminal components to massage therapy and human trafficking and things like that. And so there is a high bar around criminal history, and that's outlined here. So you can see no felony convictions within 5 years, no misdemeanors related to massage therapy within 2 years, no adverse action on the license within 2 years, have not previously had a license revoked or surrendered, and then no convictions related to kidnapping, trafficking, smuggling, sexual battery, or other offenses which the commission by rule can designate. So our drafting team was very mindful. We want this to be for good actors who are licensed in good standing. We don't want to exacerbate any criminal components of the profession. Okay, and then just briefly here, touch on some of the benefits, and then I'll take any questions from the board. So obviously, primary benefit here is mobility for licensees. They now have the ability to practice in other states where they are not licensed. Expanding employment opportunities. I touched on the benefits for the military spouse population. Reduces the financial burden of maintaining multiple licenses. So maybe now you have to maintain three or four licenses depending on the different states where you're practicing. And this really cuts down on all that. You only have to maintain one license. You only have to pay one renewal fee. You only have to do CE for one state rather than four or five different states. State boards really like these because they reduces the amount of administrative burden for them. So spending less time processing out-of-state applications. There's also provisions for joint investigations and collaborating on discipline that occurs across state lines, and then also raising the bar in terms of regulation with the amount of information sharing that takes place via that data system that's developed. And then states like these as well as a workforce development tool while maintaining their state sovereignty. So states retain control over the Practice Act. They retain control over the practice that occurs within their state borders. They can still discipline multi-state license holders who are practicing within their state just as they would a normal licensee. And so we're facilitating mobility while simultaneously allowing the states to retain their control. Okay, and I know when we received this request to present to the board, there was a question about universal recognition, particularly in Arizona, one of the first states to pass one of these laws. So here's just a brief chart kind of highlighting the differences between interstate compacts and universal recognition. So you could see here that in terms of scope of practice and reducing barriers for out-of-state practitioners, they're kind of the same. Where compacts differ is that the reciprocity is two-way. So you're not only recruiting people to come work into your state, but you're also giving your licensees the chance to go and expand their market share and work in other states. So you're removing those barriers for your in-state practitioners. Also, the benefits for military spouses not having to get relicensed during their active duty service, facilitating telehealth without having to get another license. There's a uniform standard that's established by developing the Interstate Compact, which is not done through universal recognition. And I mentioned the database, so enhancing public protection by creating the multi-state database of licensure information, and then allowing multi-state practice without having to change your home state of residence. So compacts, universal recognition is great, certainly, and allows a lot of benefits for out-of-state practitioners to come and easily get licensed in the new state. But interstate compacts do a little bit more in terms of removing barriers for in-state practitioners while maintaining a high bar for public health and safety. And most universal recognition policies do exempt professions that have interstate compacts. So if Arizona was to join the compact, they would then be exempted from the universal recognition policy in Arizona. The compact would supersede that existing statute because it would be the newer enacted statute by joining the interstate compact. So that's how universal recognition and interstate compacts coexist. All right, so I'm happy to take some questions from the board if there's time. There's my contact information, and again, really appreciate the opportunity to present today.
Matt, that was an incredible amount of information in a short period of time and very educational. And how do we sign up?
Yeah, so great question. The compact is currently still in draft mode. So we had a public comment period for about 3 months during the summer where we had folks submitting their comments and feedback. That has since closed at the end of last month. And now essentially we're taking all that feedback, sharing it with our working group that we've developed and making changes to the compact as necessary. And then it'll be ready for the next legislative session in 2023. So we're just putting kind of the finishing touches on the language. It should, the final draft should probably be available sometime in October.
Wonderful. I think that there's a lot of opportunity there. I think that currently with Arizona having universal law, that doing compact would probably benefit our industry a bit more than the universal law that we currently have. That's my comment. Other board members, do you have comments or questions for Matt Schaefer?
This is board member Tapscott. Matt, thank you, by the way. That was really informative, very interesting. So just to get clarification points from you, I think you already stated really clearly to make sure I understand, right, to kind of put them on the record. So in your opinion, a compact like this would be a very good thing for a state that was pro-business to adopt, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. It's increasing your licensees' market share to go and work in other states, but then also it could be a recruiting tool to get people to come and work in Arizona.
Got it. So, okay, just checking. So if we had lawmakers that were very pro-business, this would be something very appealing to them. Secondly, it seems like it also has upholds standards better than universal acceptance does. And that's your opinion too, I take it?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I mentioned with in the state and practitioner sections that I cover, those list of requirements, there is a bar for standards. So you're not having to accept people from states that maybe are lowering their standards. There's that bar of 625 hours of education and passage of the national exam, things like that, where you can trust that the person coming and practicing in Arizona has met a high standard.
So it's kind of a pro-business, pro-public safety approach as far as you're concerned.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you, Matt.
Thank you for great questions, Michael. Yes, Ms. Moon.
Hi, Matt. Thank you so much for the presentation. Again, super helpful and informative. I did have a question, and I was trying to think of an answer or a solution for you, and unfortunately, I don't have anyone, so I'll pitch to you. In the realm of public safety, I know you guys did say that you touched on wanting to assure that this wasn't a opportunity for traffickers, and you talked about conviction rates in the realm of human trafficking or sex crimes. Is there any conversation or anything that's being stimulated within the work group that informs that conviction rates for human trafficking are unfortunately low, as well as labor trafficking even lower? So are there any other measures that the work group is working on just to assure that, I think it's great that the conviction clause is on there, but that I personally believe that there's probably more that interstate compacts as well as states need to hold accountable, because there are not right now a lot of convictions.
Yeah, that's a fantastic question and something we certainly spend a lot of time discussing, because the reality is a lot of times there might be a conviction, it gets pled down to something more minor, or no conviction at all, like you said. So yeah, it's an ongoing discussion, and it's certainly something that the working group is very mindful of. In terms of specific measures that we put into the compact, we haven't talked about anything that is not conviction related. And I'd be curious if you had thoughts about how that could be addressed. Maybe we could have some dialogue about that afterwards, an email or something. But we want to ensure that the compact is able to be used by the good actors in the profession, and we're doing everything we can to make sure that it can't be exploited.
Great, thank you. Yeah, and I, unfortunately, like I said, I don't have any solutions right now, but I would love to tease that over and definitely be of service if you guys are interested.
And Bailey, do you have any questions for Matt?
Yeah, so I am, I think I heard that if we were a part of the compact, it would supersede the universal licensing, but we would still have both with the universal licensing still apply. And I guess my question is, so from what I heard, California wouldn't have, or Kansas wouldn't have qualified to be a part of the compact. Does that mean that they would be able to practice within Arizona if we were to join the compact, because they're still under universal licensing, or does the compact now supersede that? Does that make sense?
Sure. So what California and Kansas residents would not be able to do is obtain a multi-state license, that license that's issued via the compact. If there's some alternative avenue for them to practice in Arizona, unfortunately, the compact can't really address that. States are still able to have their own pathways to licensure that are in place. So Arizona has adopted universal recognition as one pathway. The compact isn't replacing that. It's just superseding it in instances where somebody's coming from another state where they do hold a multi-state license. So if there's somebody that's using the compact, they don't need to use universal recognition anymore. But if they're coming from a state that can't join the compact, then universal recognition would still be an avenue for them.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification.
Thank you. Are there any other questions for Mr. Schaefer? We're only taking questions from the board members. Sorry. Okay. Matt, thank you so much for presenting today. We've got it on recording, so we can always come back and review it at a later date, so people on the call or those who were not able to be here today will be able to view it and get that information as well.
Great. Thank you all.
Thank you. All right, moving on. Items for board review, discussion, and possible action. Upon a vote of the majority of the quorum, the board may go into executive session pursuant to ARS 38-431.03A2 to discuss or consider records exempt by law from public inspection, including the receipt and discussion of information or testimony that is specifically required to be maintained as confidential by state or federal law. On the agenda, we do have an order here, but I am going to move around just a little bit because we do have a consent agreement to consider for case number 22-148, Mai Kyon Kramer. Investigator Elson, are you available to summarize this case and then followed by Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan?
Yes, Madam Chair. She was the hearing case that we were supposed to hear last board meeting for aiding and abetting a house of prostitution. She decided to surrender her license rather than go back under investigative review. And we sent her a surrender. She signed it and returned it to us. It just needs acceptance by y'all.
Okay, thank you. And Assistant Attorney Seamus Monahan.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board. That's absolutely correct. I don't think I have much to add to that. You'll see that the consent agreement, again, is for aiding and abetting a house of prostitution. So all you have to do today is make a motion to accept it.
Okay. I move to accept the consent agreement and order for surrender of massage therapy license 13631, Mai Kyon Kramer, case number 22-148.
This is Board Member Tapscott. I second that motion.
And a roll call vote, please, Mr. Augerton.
Vice Chair Moon.
Aye.
Board Member DeRoost.
Aye.
Board Member Tapscott?
Aye.
Chair Ryder?
Aye.
4 ayes.
The motion passes. Now on the agenda, we will move back to our first investigative review. This is case number 22-244, Nate Avila, and this is for massage therapy imposter. This is a preliminary review of the information available to the board at this time. It is not a hearing. Is Nate Avila present in this meeting?
Yes, I am.
Thank you. Are you represented by counsel, and if so, whom?
Represented by counsel, John Thorpe.
And is John Thorpe on the call today as well?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'm right here.
Thank you very much. Investigator David Elson, can you please provide a summary of the complaint against Nate Avila?
Yes, Madam Chair. Members of the board, on August 18th, 2022, board staff received a complaint indicating the respondent was practicing and advertising via the internet as a licensed massage therapist. Complaint even went and stated the individual by name of Nate Avila, and summarize that he advertised home massage sweetest massage, deep tissue massage, and cupping massage. During the course of the investigation, I went online and found several things where he was offering 15 minutes of massage house call, and it's denoted on the report that's in your packet, providing Swedish massage, deep tissue massage, cupping, and stretch therapy. There was a couple for home massages, and then some other stuff I found that's included in the packet. So, yeah, he was advertising as a massage therapist, although he's not licensed by our board of massage therapy.
Thank you for that, Mr. Elson. Mr. Avila, would you like to make a brief statement or present any information at this time? I know that we did get correspondence from your attorney, John Thorpe, as well, which was in our packet.
Yes, thank you so much. I, on record, want to say that as no intent to practice as a massage therapist or advertising as a massage therapist, as that scheduling app is a preloaded of those type of services. So as when, if I am up and running, those were on the servicing app as where I have not yet finished creating my services for the stretch therapy. I am aware to not practice massage therapy without a license, as I'm currently a student at the East Valley of Institute of Technology in Mesa, Arizona, currently obtaining my licensure to become a massage therapist. My schooling has started as of August 1st of 2022, which I intend to proceed to graduate of May 25th of 2023. That's when I would be able to have the countless hours of 720 hours to then apply for my massage therapy license.
Thank you, Mr. Avila. And Mr. John Thorpe, counsel, do you have anything that you would like to add?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board. I just want to add, I guess, emphasize the context that Mr. Avila is a certified personal trainer. He uses a variety of modalities, and there is overlap with massage, which the, you know, the board and the legislature recognize and includes specifically a statute, ARS 32-4221B5, which states that when a client is fully clothed and a physical trainer is acting as such, that the licensing regulations don't apply to those activities. So Mr. Avila was acting in good faith, advertising activities that, you know, he used the word massage in some instances, but PTs do massage too. It's just in a different context. He doesn't want to practice without a license. He doesn't believe he's done so. He just like to satisfy the board that that's the case and move on from this. Thank you.
Thank you. I would like to comment and then offer an opportunity for the other board members to comment or question as well. From what was presented in the packet and in the complaint and what was presented in the correspondence from Mr. Avila's attorney are very two different presentations. So the initial complaint shows clearly types of massage modalities being offered for a specific price. In what we received from the attorney was then those same, the same, not really the same advertisements, but it was altered. So it was changed as if once it was noticed that it was being advertised, oops, I better change that and take it down. I'm very familiar with the Vigaro system because I use it in my business, and I know that it is very easy to, it does have like the pre-done services on there, but you can alter the descriptions. And what we got in the initial complaint were descriptions that were already created. So I understand that maybe, Mr. Avila, you were in preparing for the future. I want to take that into consideration. However, also note too that you had prices on there. So it is assumed that you are charging for those services at the time and being advertised. So that's my comment. I'd like to ask the other board members if they have any questions or comments as well.
This is Vice Chair Moon. No questions at this point, but I do just want to mention and comment the almost provoking language or post that we received of, you know, the image of of him and saying that, you know, he's going to get arrested for saying that he's a future LMT, but you haven't been licensed yet. So though that's not anything direct, I do think that it was provoking to the concept that someone was practicing before being licensed.
This is Board Member Tapscott. Mr. Avila, did anybody contact you about those massages? Did somebody click on those links and schedule something with you?
No, not once.
Not once. Have you ever massaged somebody who didn't have clothes on?
Nope, not once.
I mean, outside of school, that is.
Nope, never.
Okay. Thank you.
And Mr. Roos, do you have anything?
Yeah, I think Board Member Tapscott asked the question that I was curious about, but on the booking, it does say experience in training in nutrition, massage therapy, and assisted stretching. So you are advertising before you got your licensing. I mean, even with the cost and the type of massages, and so, it does appear that you were advertising as a massage therapist. So I guess it's more of a comment than a question. But Mr. Tapscott asked the question that I was really curious about, if anybody had booked anything or if any massages had been completed. And I heard that it was a no. Thank you.
Sorry, this is Board Member Tapscott. I also have a question for Mr. Thorpe, if that's okay. You gave us the example that physical therapists are able to do massage under their license. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Tapscott.
Thank you. How does that apply to this situation? Is this individual a physical therapist?
Yes, he's a certified... Actually, I'm sorry, not a physical therapist. He's a physical trainer. So he's not licensed by the state, but he's certified as a physical trainer by a national certifying body.
Okay.
So there are two specific carve-outs for each of those PTs, and physical trainers and physical therapists.
So physical trainers are also allowed to massage clients is a carve-out as well? I'm aware of the physical therapist one. I'm not aware of the personal trainer one.
So my understanding is that there is a specific carve-out for physical trainers because they do use modalities where there's some overlap with massage. That's the statute, again, is ARS 32-4221B5. It says this chapter does not apply to when the customer is fully clothed, the practice of personal trainers.
Okay. All right. Thank you, sir.
So I think the language being used that may have been a little bit confusing there was it is personal trainer, not physical trainer.
Yes, Mr. Ryder, I'm sorry if I misspoke.
No, that's okay. Just for added clarification. And yes, personal trainers can perform body work and types of massages as the clients are closed within the jurisdiction of their certification.
Can I
ask yes, one please.
Question that I have? So is your page still up and are you still advertising minus the massage therapy?
Yes, the page is still up. It is as if you click on it, you will see the Vigaro system has a category set still. It will say massage therapy. But if you click on the massage therapy, brings the drop down and all my services now say stretch therapy.
Okay, so how often do you... So I just noticed that your accreditation, it expires on 9/10/2022.
I have an updated one. Yearly? Yeah, it's every 2 years. I have an updated one that I sent to John Thorpe. That was as of received of 9/10/2022. I have to take continuing education credits for that license or that certification as well every 2 years, and on top of renewing for a CPR certification. I also do want to point on record as well, too, that I do currently own my finger clearance card for the Arizona DPS. That is required for it to be in class for East Valley of Institute of Technology, and I know that is required for to go for my license as well for the Massage Board of Therapy.
Thank you.
This is Board Member Tapscott. I've got a question for Investigator David Elson. sir. Just for clarification, you gathered some of this evidence that you saw online, but you did not actually call the individual and try to book an appointment or anything like that, right? This is all just stuff we gleaned offline, correct? Or online, I apologize.
You're muted, sir.
Sorry, I got it all offline. I didn't call this one and try to book an appointment because I usually try to get somebody else to do it so it's not my voice going all over the place, but I didn't on this case.
Okay, it's very helpful. Thank you.
Any other questions? All right, based on the information presented at this meeting, what do the board members suggest, recommend, motion that we do for this case and proceed in proceeding? One of our options is to issue a cease and desist letter from performing massage therapy until they're licensed.
And Madam Chair, this is Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan. It sounded to me, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but really what we're discussing is advertising as an unlicensed massage therapist and not actually performing massage therapy. So that would be what the, you know, please don't do that anymore letter would encompass.
Understood. Thank you for that clarification.
This is Board Member Tapscott, and in my opinion, I mean, there are some things that are a little concerning here, but I don't have quite enough evidence to hold against this individual who is in good standing in other, you know, in other ways in our community and such. So, you know, I think a letter of cease and desist from advertising for massage, and the understanding that we've come, I mean, this individual's been very clear that they understand that they would not be performing massage for pay. And I just don't have enough to go further than that, you know, at this point.
Would you like to make a motion?
This is Board Member Tapscott. I motion that we issue a letter of cease and desist from advertising for paid massage therapy services to Mr. Avila, and that's it.
This is Board Member Jerusalem. I'll second that motion.
And a roll call vote, please, Mr. Arrington.
Yes, Madam Chair. Vice Chair Moon?
Aye.
Board Member Tapscott?
Aye.
Board Member DeRoost?
Aye.
Chair Ryder?
Aye.
You have four ayes.
The motion passes. All right, our next case. Actually, if we don't mind, could we take a 5-minute comfort break, please? Investigator Elson, just so you know, you're not muted right now. Just in case.
Okay. I knew I wasn't.
Okay.
So I don't try to talk in the next case with the muted.
Okay, perfect.
Did I say something I wasn't supposed to?
Not at all.
Oh, phew.
I was just being proactive.
Thank gosh. I was like, oh, what did I say?
It is 9:55 on Monday, September 22nd, 2022, and we are back in session. Our next case, license application for review. This is case number 22-188, Lon Howe. This is a preliminary review of the information available to the board at this time. It is not a hearing. The board may consider granting or denying application for licensure. Is Lon Howe present at this meeting?
She's muted.
And Ms. Howe, if you could please unmute yourself and speak up to let us know you're here for the record.
I'm here.
Okay, thank you. And are you represented by counsel?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Mr. Investigator Elson.
Madam Chair, before
we go on. If she's represented by counsel, we need a letter of representation, well, and they have to be licensed in Arizona.
Well, before we go that far, if we could just see who Ms. Howe is talking to, they could. If they're going to talk before the board, they need to present themselves and state their name.
Yes, please.
And what they're related.
If you have counsel, please put them in the camera so that we can see them. Ms. Howe, please put your representative counsel in your camera so that we can see them and ask questions.
Could they?
That's not what we're asking for. We need to see the person that you said is representing you as counsel. No.
Madam Chair.
Yes, please go ahead, Mr. Monahan.
I think before we go down this route, I believe this was an issue with the application.
Yes.
And this was not a universal or reciprocity application. Is that correct? It's an initial application. Okay. And this is totally up to you, but my recommendation would be that it appears to me that there's a question about whether there was fraudulent documents or fraudulent information presented to the board in the application. that being said, I would advise the board I would recommend that you back this up and stop the clock on the application and request information regarding her schooling in order to substantiate, you know, if the amount of hours were able to be completed in the time that's stated.
That's very good. Thank you. And I, Mr. David Elson, investigator, were you able to do a review of that application to confirm any of the information?
I was. I found a lot of different stuff. First of all, it was the case was initiated based on a comprehensive fingerprint background check that found that the applicant was charged with prostitution by the Appleton, Wisconsin Police Department, and that those charges were declined to be prosecuted by the district attorney in that county. But looking into her application, she applied for a regular initial application. She marked that English was her native language, but after talking to her on the phone, I could tell that wasn't absolutely true. So therefore, her application was falsified under that question. And she marked that she completed 750 hours of education at El Paso Massage Institute between January 14th, 2019 and April 12th, 2019. Which, if you figure 750 hours in that amount of time, would be impossible. So that appears to be falsified also.
Yeah, that's 90 or 91 days of a 750-hour program. Okay. So at this time, according to the application, and based on the information presented at this meeting and contained in the investigative report and the application review, we've determined that the applicant does not meet the licensing requirements. Is that correct, Mr. Elson?
Well, that and the application is falsified.
Okay.
And just so I can clarify, how did we determine that were we able to get documents from El Paso?
We can't even get them to answer the phone. You just get a fast busy signal. It's like they don't exist.
Okay.
Board members, what say you at this time?
This is Board Member Tapscott. It actually sounds like there's a couple of issues with this application, correct? We have questions about the school, which we haven't verified yet, and maybe it's just a misprint on date, who knows, but it could be a big problem or not. There's an English language issue, as much as I hate saying it here too. So, I mean, at the bare minimum, we have to reject the application, and I mean, at the absolute bare minimum, the most lenient thing we can do is to reject this application, have the person, the individual, reapply, pass an English proficiency test, and then we can start going down the avenue of the education itself. But I mean, just on that, that might be the easiest avenue to go here, since there are multiple reasons to reject this application at this point. But that's the most glaring one, I think.
I agree with you, Mr. Tapscott. Ms. Moon or Mr. Roos, do you have any comments that you'd like to add?
No comments. I agree with Mr. Tapscott, though.
I agree as well.
And Madam Chair, Mr. Tapscott is 100% correct that you can deny this application based on the fact that, you know, there are a couple of things you have already determined are fraudulent, and the Ms. Howe can then reapply next week if she wanted to and can present a you know, reputable, accurate application.
Thank you. At this time, I move that we reject the application for Lon Howe based on the information of fraudulent information, inaccurate information.
And what is the statutory side on that, Chair Ryder? Would that be under 4253?
It would.
4253A2, using fraud, deceit, or misrepresentation in obtaining or attempting to obtain a license?
That's absolutely accurate.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And may I have a second on that motion?
This is Board Member Tapscott. I second that motion.
And a roll call vote, please, Mr. Tom Augerton.
Board Member DeRoost?
Aye.
Vice Chair Moon?
Aye.
Board Member Tapscott?
Aye.
Chair Ryder?
Aye.
4 ayes.
The motion passes. This application is rejected. You are welcome to fill out a new application and fulfill the requirements. Next case, case number 22-233, Joanna Iris. This is a preliminary review of the information available to the board at this time. It is not a hearing. The board may consider granting or denying application for licensure. Is Joanna Iris present at this meeting? And I am not hearing that Joanna Iris is present at this meeting. Would board staff be able to confirm that?
I have not heard her nor seen her.
Okay. Moving on then, Mr. Investigator Elson, would you please provide a summary of this investigative review for Joanna Iris?
Yes, Madam Chair. As far as her not being here, I emailed her the notice of application consideration on September 16th, and she emailed me back saying she didn't recognize the board's jurisdiction. I think that's in the packet there.
It is.
Let's see. So we... Hold on just a second.
David, we believe received, you're waiting on a disposition, correct?
Please.
Correct. We, board did, after a completion of a thorough fingerprint background check, found that the individual had been charged in 2008 for felony prostitution in Bossier City, Louisiana, and also a 2006 misdemeanor conviction for false pretenses in Oklahoma. The disposition was listed for the Oklahoma, but in 2008, there was no disposition for her felony prostitution charge. I spoke with Ms. Iris and asked her if she would provide the board a disposition since it was so old in 2008, showing where the charge was either not prosecuted or reduced or what, and she decided that she wasn't going to do that and sent a bunch of emails to me about stuff that really had nothing to do with the board's investigation. And to date, she has not contacted me again since.
Okay. Is there anything else that you want to add to that, Investigator?
If she doesn't recognize the board's jurisdiction, I put on the application to just deny her, because if she doesn't recognize our jurisdiction for an application consideration, then she appears to be unregulatable as far as regulating her practice.
Thank you for that. Board members, do you have any other questions for Investigator Elson regarding this case? I'm assuming that everybody was able to read all of the emails that were sent by Ms. Iris.
This is Board Member Tapscott. I did have the pleasure of reading all those emails. I just want to, Mr. Elson, I don't have a question. I just want to just, I think you summarized it perfectly. And I don't think we need to add any more to that, although much could be added, but that's enough.
And Madam Chair, members of the board, I would recommend based on the fact that we are not on really solid grounds here for a denial, I would recommend that you continue this matter and request that disposition. And if that disposition is not provided, we could come back next meeting and we'd be on better grounds at that point.
Understood. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. Based on the information presented at this meeting, I move to continue this case to the next board meeting and allow the applicant to provide the necessary documents to fulfill the application requirements.
This is Board Member Tapscott. I second that motion.
And a roll call vote, please.
Vice Chair Moon?
Aye.
Board Member DeRoost?
Aye.
Board Member Tapscott?
Aye.
Chair Ryder?
Aye.
4 ayes.
The motion passes. Next case is 22-240, Akilah Johnson. This is a preliminary review of the information available to the board at this time. It is not a hearing, and the board may consider granting or denying application for licensure. Is Akilah Johnson present at this meeting?
I am.
Thank you for joining us today. And are you represented by counsel? And if so, whom?
I am not represented by counsel, no ma'am.
Okay, thank you. Investigator Elson, could you please provide a summary of the investigative review for Akilah Johnson?
Yes, on July 1st, 2022, applicant completed an initial application for license as a massage therapist. On our application, applicant marked no to question. Have you ever been convicted of a class 1, 2, or 3 felony? Have you ever been convicted of a class 4, 5, or 6 felony offense involving moral turpitude? During the course of the fingerprint background check, it was discovered the applicant was convicted of a felony, aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, which was downgraded to attempt to commit a crime. Based on this, let's see. So she marked no to all or the have you been convicted of a felony questions, which is falsification of her application. She was found guilty of misdemeanor assault in... Molnatoff County, Oregon Circuit Court. She was also found guilty of attempting to commit a crime after being charged with assault with a deadly weapon in Molnatoff County, Oregon Circuit Court. In 2003, she was found guilty of misdemeanor larceny in Clackamas County, Oregon Circuit Court. And on September 20, 2005, was charged with a probation violation and parole violation by the Clackamas County, Oregon Circuit Court in relation to the felony.
Okay. Ms. Johnson, do you wish to make a brief statement or present any information at this time?
Yes, well, upon me applying for my application, I have been working with an attorney that was assisting me with expungement. And at that time, he had made me believe that once I apply, I didn't, you know, I would be expunged and everything would be cleared, and I didn't need to place that on my application. For the record, the felony is expungible because of the class level of it, and it was a domestic violence circumstance. I was in a relationship from 14 to 22. I even got back into that relationship after the incident, and so. That is pretty much what I have to say to that.
Okay. Thank you for that. Board members, questions, comments? I think one of the questions that I have, and I don't know if this would go to Ms. Johnson, because I'm not, or our Assistant Attorney General or our investigator, because I'm not as familiar with the law. But Ms. Johnson, you had indicated that your attorney had told you about this charge being expunged. And I'm wondering how that works with the application process when we're asking the questions if they've committed any of those felonies. If something is expunged on a record, does an individual still have to mark on the application that there was a charge on there, even if it has been expunged?
Madam Chair, this is Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan. You can do it if I'm not saying the right things. But no, even though it is expunged, there's a law here that allows for a certificate of second chance, which specifically says in the language that they don't have to let the board know about it on the application. But that's after you get expunged, and then you get that certificate of second chance. I won't speak to what Ms. Johnson's lawyer told her. However, I will say that this is not the first time that I have heard of an attorney saying, well, it was expunged, don't put it on there. But for the board's purpose, I believe the application actually references whether it's been dismissed, expunged, or not. And I could be correct there. But regardless of that, it still should be reported. But I understand what the applicant is saying. I have heard that many times before. Attorneys will tell them, oh, you don't have to put that on there.
Okay. Thank you. Board members?
This is Vice Chair Moon. Can we get confirmation from staff that that question is on there specific to whether something's been expunged or not, or is it, what's the length?
It's not expunged. It hasn't been expunged.
What is on the application specific to the question?
So there's no question on there that had.
Have you been convicted of a class 1, 2, or 3 felony? Or have you been convicted of a class 4, 5, or 6 felony involving moral turpitude? And she marked no to both of those, when in fact she had.
But there's no question regarding anything.
There's no expungement question on the application.
Okay. Thank you. That's what I was asking.
Perhaps that's an idea. I like that you brought that up, Ms. Moon. Let's save that in the back of our heads. Any other questions from the board members?
I guess I'll just comment for the board. I think I'm struggling a little bit of the advisement or what's been told of if she was being advised by an attorney and it was not accurate information. I'm curious if there's some wiggle room for us to understand that.
Vice Chair Moon, I believe this is really just a board decision. If you believe what the applicant is saying to you, then I think you could consider this a de minimis violation. Look at the time frames of when these events occurred. Maybe discuss what's happened in recent since those, with the applicant. But again, this is really a board decision. Your hands aren't tied here.
So we are able to still approve if we all decide and we see clarification. Thank you. I think that was my question.
In my opinion, I like to give people the benefit of the doubt in most cases. My opinion is that there is a possibility that that Ms. Johnson was given incorrect information by her attorney, and this offense did happen quite some time ago. She recently graduated from massage therapy school and applied. I would say to err on the side of caution with the new legislation that is going to be in effect as of January 2023, that you want to make sure, Ms. Johnson, too, that if your license goes through today after our vote, that you are prepared to make sure that that gets expunged off of your record because you may not qualify for a level 1 clearance card. Okay. Do any board members care to make a motion?
Well, this board member Tapscott, I just have a quick question for Ms. Johnson. So am I reading your report right that you have not had any offenses in the last 17 years?
Correct.
Okay. Besides a speeding ticket or something.
Right.
Okay. All right. I mean, unless something directly applies to massage, I feel like 17 years is a very long period of time. I would sure want forgiveness after 17 years. And I can understand the gray area, believe it or not. So this is board member Tapscott. I motion that we approve this license.
I second that motion. I beat you to it. Can we do a roll call vote, please, Mr. Ogerton?
Yes, Madam Chair. Board Member DeRoost?
Aye.
Vice Chair Moon?
Aye.
Board Member Tapscott?
Aye.
Chair Ryder?
Aye.
4 ayes.
The motion passes. We can go ahead and proceed with the application and licensure for Ms. Johnson.
Good luck to you, Ms. Johnson.
Good luck. All right, next on our... Oh, you're welcome. Next on our agenda, Board Investigator Report. Mr. David Olson, you are up once again. Can you please provide any new information about current status of submitted administrative case investigations?
So between last board and this board, we had 10 new cases. We administratively closed 5 of those. 5 are still pending. We processed 102 fingerprints, and we're awaiting DPS on 74 of those.
Okay. Now, Investigator, I have a couple more questions, and I won't make them too difficult for you because I know that you already have history with these questions. So there's a lot of people on the call today wanting to know, can you please provide any new information, and I'll be specific, about the new legislation for Level 1 fingerprint clearance cards? And what I specifically am looking for that I think a lot of people are asking is, first, the effective date for new applications, the effective date for renewals. We'll start there.
Okay, so the bill became active last Thursday. So now if you're doing an initial application, you're going to have a fingerprint, proof of a fingerprint clearance card to apply for a license. If you don't have the fingerprint clearance card, you're not going to get a chance to come before the board because we won't process the application without it. If you're attempting to do a renewal at this time, you're going to need to have that fingerprint clearance card at the time you apply for your renewal. I actually came to the office yesterday to work on fingerprints, and I want to make sure that people are understanding. Don't submit a fingerprint card to us. I have a feeling that I've got a bunch of cards here that are for fingerprint clearance cards, and they're just submitting the whole fingerprint card to us rather than DPS, because I had numerous, I think I told y'all I did processed 102. I had numerous that say fingerprint clearance card, and I'm thinking that they had those done, and instead of giving them to DPS, they gave them to us, and they're not going to like the outcome when they don't get a fingerprint clearance card from us.
David, I'm going to jump in real quick. The fingerprint clearance card part of the law does not go into effect until January 1st, 2023. Oh. So new applicants will, on starting January 1st, anybody who applies after that will have to have the fingerprint clearance card. And then anybody renewing for their biannual renew after that will need it at that time.
I found that to be confusing because I thought it was based off of, I thought it was effective for new applicants last Thursday, and then in general.
The language says beginning on January 1st, 2023, okay. All new applicants and renewals and reinstatements will need to have it. So.
Oh, see, I also thought it started last Thursday.
No, that's the effective date for the other part, the felony conviction section.
Now, the other question we had a lot of questions was, I've had a massage license for 10 years, but I don't qualify for a fingerprint clearance card because of a felony 17 years ago. Is there a grandfather clause? And the board doesn't have a grandfather clause. So we're not going to go before the board. You're going to have to file for a good faith exemption with DPS to get the card. You present your case to them. They'll decide whether to give you a card. Then you apply to us.
And that was going to be my follow-up question for you, because that was, like you said, a big question that was being asked. So there is a good faith exemption that people can apply for, and it's a process going through the court system to get, and please correct me if I'm wrong, I think in the state of Arizona, charges cannot be completely expunged off of a record, but they can be exempt.
Chair, I believe with the new certificate of second chance, you could technically get it expunged now.
Oh, okay. Good to know.
But prior to that, you're right. There was no expungement.
Okay. All right. So for people on the call, tell all of your massage therapist friends, your educators, anybody in a massage therapy business, that fingerprint clearance card, starting January 1st of 2023, you will need to have them for your renewals as well as initial applications. So for those who are in school now, getting ready to graduate, getting ready to submit their applications, the information is available on the DPS website now, correct? Because that, it's not on there?
This is Board Member Tapscott.
Or like being able to select massage therapy board on
there?
No,
you're not. I mean, I just checked this morning. You're not able to select massage therapy, which is okay right now. But I do want to point out that should this be true a month from now, It takes up to 8 weeks to get your fingerprint clearance card. That's according to their website. And so if it's not up within a month, that will be actually holding up applicants unnecessarily. So I'm assuming it'll be resolved by then, but that is something we would need to discuss at the next meeting if it's still not up. I would like to put that on the agenda as an emergency item if that is still the case a month from now. Because right Absolutely. Now, you can't apply for a fingerprint clearance card right now as a okay. massage therapist.
Good point. So board staff, if we can add that, and if there is a possibility of being able to follow up and see when we can get the massage therapy board on there as an option for our new applicants, that would be outstanding. Moving on to the next item on our agenda, we have the Executive Director's Report. I give you Mr. Tom Augerton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a few brief points, some of which you may already be familiar with, but just to cover for diligence. The annual meeting of the FSMTB is coming up on October the 18th through the 22nd. Arizona's representative will be the board chair at that meeting. This will be her first meeting nationally to the FSMTB, and each of you will have the same opportunity in the years ahead. And I've asked the chair, which is typically custom when she returns from the meeting, if she would provide a brief to the board publicly at the October meeting, and she's indicated she would. And we'll post that, and if she has some subjects that she learned back at the national meeting and wants to discuss in more detail, we can do that as well. I wanted to let you know that we have a new budget analyst who I think I introduced to you once before, Rob Aldis, and we have submitted our budget request for the new fiscal year asking for additional FTEs. I'm sure you're getting that dog barking in the background. It's always time for these types of issues. I apologize. So we're asking, as you know, for two new licensing staff and one new investigative staff. And the finalization of the work, we've been answering questions from the budget staff actually through this morning. His work is going to be concluded the next couple of days, and then we'll hear what the disposition is when it's submitted formally to OSBB, the Governor's Budget Office. And, of course, our request was also submitted to the Legislative Budget Office, JLBC, and we'll know more as time goes on that. The request for additional access to existing funds in the board's revolving fund, and we have a rough balance currently of about $1.3 million. So we have funds adequate for the hiring of additional permanent staff, but we don't have the authorization currently. And if this is granted, this would be the first time in many years that the board has requested staff or that the board has been given the opportunity to increase the size of the staff. Something I didn't have on my notes here, but I think I'll mention because it's kind of parenthetical to this discussion. As you all know, because you've all seen a copy of it, we went through a sunset performance audit with the Arizona Auditor General's office. The board staff will be appearing before the committees of reference late this calendar year in the House and the Senate. and the chair will be towed along as well for visibility and shielding for us. And then in January, the Joint Legislative Audit Committee will be meeting on the performance audit as well. And one of the findings that was in the report is that the board has not conducted a review of licensing fees for many, many years. And that was a recommendation by the Auditor General. In addition, we've been inquired on this issue from the OSPD staff last week. So you'll probably see an agenda item forthcoming at a future board meeting to see if you want to authorize the staff to begin that process and report the findings back to you publicly. And I just wanted to mention that in parentheses. The board, as you also know, is converting to board licensing to provide digital access for licensees to come to the board website and conduct business. As you are intimately aware from us and your colleagues, we have had intermittent service this year and even last year with digital processing. And when we don't have access to digital processing, or if the board doesn't have access to fee verification, we've resorted back to PDF forms, which means paper licensing and the U.S. mailing or emailing of paper licensings to the board for processing. We're going to be acquiring our own Adobe digital licenses in the next few days, and they would be renewed annually and provide a little more assurance of consistent digital licensing availability. As we mentioned here before to you, the board is mandated to convert to a new database. It's being provided. The product is Thentia. All of the boards and commissions are currently in process with this. And I just remind you of that going on. It'll be late fall of this year and theoretically operational early in 2023. And I wanted to remind myself, to remind the chair, that she had brought some issues up at the last meeting which did not make this agenda, but presumably would be on the October agenda, one of which was a finding by the Auditor General's Office of delegation of authority to the Executive Director for case closure. And we don't have that finalized yet, but that's to remind me, to remind her, to remind me again, so we don't forget it in October. Once we get that language, we'll post that for action. And Madam Chair, it seems to me there's something else that I was supposed to remind you to remind me. Do you
but I don't remember what that was. I think we were working on securing Mr. Greg Harris for our next.
We put an invitation out to Mr. Harris with Lewis and Roca, who represents the AMTA here in Arizona, to see if he would like to come in and brief the board. Typically, in previous years, he's provided an annual legislative update. Which brings me to one last point. Each of you have received a copy of the legislative analysis provided by the Attorney General's office, and our version being penciled by Seamus Monahan. And if you get a chance to read it, it's fascinating on some of the issues that were adjudicated this year across the street at the legislature. But one I do want to bring to your personal attention that I'm going to be reading from his memo, but was on House Bill 2741. Typically, as you know, the board has the statutory authority to do fee waiver for individuals qualifying based on income levels and the national poverty standard. This will, the bill legislation has increased the scope of the fee waiver for other individuals in the U.S. military. And I'm just going to read this so I don't get this wrong. This action previously required state agencies to waive the initial licensing fee for any individual whose family income does not exceed 200% of the federal poverty guideline. Now, in addition to the previously included individuals, the bill adds any active duty military service members, spouse, any honorably discharged veterans, as long as the veteran applies for licensure within 2 years of discharge, to the list of individuals for whom agencies would waive initial licensing fees. The board is going to be required to give an annual report to the Department administration and the Senate leadership and House leadership, but I wanted to mention that because you have someone that called today to let them know about the legislative expanding of fee waiver for this board's licensing fees.
Okay.
But if you get a chance, read that analysis by Seamus. It's interesting. It's a trends analysis, but it's also interesting in terms of the individual applicability to some of the board's statutory authority.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. I also want to thank you, too, for your executive director's report regarding transparency of the massage therapy budget, the revolving fund, what you have asked for as far as an increase in budget. And I think that that transparency during a public meeting will inform the public a little bit more about some of the challenges that our board faces and what we are doing about it. So I appreciate all of your hard work. I know that you've been in a lot of meetings with a lot of people and doing a lot of paperwork. So I do appreciate that.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Let's see. Are there any other items that other board members would like to see added to the agenda, either next time or future agendas?
This is Board Member Tapscott. This is not an item to add to the agenda, but if I could be so bold, I just want to publicly thank the board staff, the tiny board staff, which is handling a license load that is much larger than any license load I am aware of for a staff that size. And I appreciate them tirelessly working to protect the public while trying to ensure business can still be done in Arizona. And I hope that that you and we and everybody in the industry get the funding that is necessary to do the job properly, and the funding of staff, and also the funding to run online electronic systems to reduce the need for staff in the first place, because I think that you guys have gotten it on both sides there without enough personnel in the office to achieve the goals of this board, and also not enough of the electronic support that they would automatically process some of this workload. But anyway, I really sincerely want to thank the board. I think you've done an incredible job with about half the resources possibly that you needed to do so.
Thank you for that, Mr. Tapscott. I 100% agree with everything that you've said. On that note, too, I am also grateful for the board staff, and we all are. You guys truly do an amazing job for us.
You guys are worried about the upcoming bake sale and car wash in front of the building, and you're not sure you really want to do it. Just admit it. Let's be honest here about transparency. Michael cannot bake, so he doesn't want to do the bake sale.
I have no contrary. I think Michael can. I've seen his recipes online. I do want to kind of just revert back a little bit to our presentation from Matt Schaefer. You know, think this is something that should be discussed further as far as how that takes place. I would be really interested to see a little bit more detail when it comes to the Interstate Compact potentially coming to Arizona and how we might be able to implement that. I mean, I just want to do a little bit more discussion and research on it, obviously, first. But what was presented to me, it appears that it would provide more of a public safety feature over our current universal law. So it's definitely something worth exploring. I would like to invite the board members to explore it a little bit more in between our meetings. We don't have to put it on the agenda next time. Or we can. Why don't we? Let's put it on the agenda for a topic of discussion for next meeting regarding the Interstate Compact, comparing that to universal law. We'll do a little bit of research in between. And when I say we, I mean our amazing board staff and board members. We can all can contribute to that.
Madam Chair, this is your lucky day. I served on the National Committee the last 2 years. And I shared many of harangue and other speeches to the National Committee and to Matt in particular. So we have a seat at the table, literally, and we can provide resources to come back and brief you.
Perfect. Thank you. Any other items for future board agendas? Ms. Moon?
Yeah, I would love to possibly have the opportunity to invite a presenter on the topic of training opportunities for human trafficking awareness. I think that should always be a pillar of our concern and our engagement within this board, and seeing what we can continue to do to support survivors of human trafficking, which is inclusive of labor trafficking as well.
We can reach out to you directly and let you know what dates are available. It might be November or December. So if you have somebody in mind and we can secure one of those dates, we can go from there.
Thank you.
Anything else?
Madam Chair, do you want to remind everybody who's at the meeting to get their CE form in as soon as the meeting's over so they'll get credit for today?
Yes. So anybody who is here with anticipating getting 3 continuing education units for attending this board meeting, I believe there is a form online. There is a form online, and you can submit that form to the info email, and our amazing board staff will provide you with those CEs in your file. Our next board meeting date is Monday, October 24th, 2022 at 9 a.m. to be held digitally. And I have nothing further. This meeting is adjourned.